Welcome to the Love Irish Food Green Ireland podcast series, episode 9. I'm Conal O'Moran, and on episode 9, we're talking about the future of food, or food of the future. But the future we're talking about is now, and some or lots of that future will involve plant-based food or foods that address our lifestyle needs. If you're in the food sector or would like to become involved, there are 8 previous podcasts well worth checking out, as we've lined up the best brains in the business for you, whether you're interested in bickies, bread or beef. These podcasts are brought to you by Love Irish Food, dedicated to sustainable, local Irish food and drinks brands that support the many, many thousands of local jobs and communities that depend on our Irish food industry. Visit loveirishfood.ie for a full list of your local brands. I'm joined now by Greta Hamill, Chief Marketing Officer of Promise Gluten Free, made by Gallagher's Bakehouse. And also with me is Mark Ryan, Marketing Director at Plantit. Both guests have really, really great track records marketing big brands internationally. So while I checked out their LinkedIn profiles, I wondered why they chose to go more local and maybe even go on a mission with their work. Greta, Mark, you're both very welcome.
Thank you.
So good to be here. Thanks.
Are you both on a mission? Are you both mad? Or why go from very large, successful companies to something a little bit more challenging? Greta, tell me why you chose to go local, if I can say that.
Okay, it's a great question. A lot of people say, are you mad and what mission are you on? I suppose I've had the privilege, as you said, of working on some very big global brands. Cadbury was one of those, and Philadelphia Cream Cheese then was the later brand that I worked on within Mondelez. I suppose I really learned how to build great brands. I really learned what superior quality meant within a brand. I really learned, you know, great learnings around execution and the ability to execute and how important that is right through to the in-store piece. And I suppose one of the things that attracted me to a business like ours then is the ability to make a difference very, very fast. You know, to turn around an innovation pipeline in a business like ours from concept to execution could take 6 months. So for me, that's what drives me, the ability to turn around things quickly. That's very exciting, to make a difference quite fast.
And fast relative or compared to the larger organizations where things might take?
It could take a year, it could take 2 years, depending on how big the opportunity is.
And eventually that breaks your heart.
Well, there's a lot of due diligence that goes into any project, to be fair. So I suppose in a smaller organization, you have less people, you require more agility. You're also in a smaller organization, potentially up against much bigger players. So you have to be nimble, you have to be able to act faster.
Now, I'll come back, Greta, to the products that you're now working on, because you've just actually, off air, we had a chat and you've just blown my head a little bit with it. But Mark, the same question to you about the mission. Is there a mission in your life? Because you had been with that lesser known Irish brand Glanbia for many years, and you've have a big international career as well.
Yeah, I suppose the biggest brand I worked on Glanbia was Optimum Nutrition, and that's like the world's number one sports nutrition brand. So it's a completely different challenge for me. But what really excited me about it was I was just brought a product. There was no brand in place when I joined Plantit. It was literally just a really great tasting plant-based product. So as a marketer, it gave me the opportunity to craft an entire brand proposition and story and everything from scratch, and take the learnings I'd taken from big corporate world, you know, where you go into incredible details on how to build a brand and how it impacts the consumer, and then bring that to a level and start from scratch where you can bring you know, your own ideas to the table and make something that's truly your own. So that was an opportunity that was too good to say no to.
But the problem was, and possibly no longer is the case, is that what you were with Plantit manufacturing or about to manufacture was completely new to the market. So therefore, you had to create a market.
Correct. Yeah, that was the real challenge. Nobody knew about us. Nobody knew what we had. We were effectively starting from scratch, and we were trying to do that and launch a new great tasting food product during a pandemic. And we couldn't sample product at all. So it was...
So that was easy.
No, it absolutely was not. We really had to think outside the box in terms of how do we find ways to get consumers to buy into the product and drive trial.
So share your learnings.
The learnings for us were it was really difficult. Taste is a USP, and we've seen in markets, we're present in Finland is the other market that we've launched in the first year, and we're actually able to sample there. And when we sampled, we cleared the shelves. we sampled and you'd be selling 80, 100 packs of product on a day in any given store.
But yeah, Ireland, tell the world what the product is. I know it's called Plant It, but what is it?
Sorry, so Plant It is a brand new frozen meat replacement product. It's made entirely from plants, so the main protein sources are pea and soy, and we create a variety of chicken-free, meat-free, fish-free, egg-free, and veggie meal solutions, with the objective of any time that a consumer is hungry, we have a plant-based option in front of them that they can have at any time for whatever meal they're interested in having.
And we couldn't have this chat at a better time, because one of the massive international chains is now, as we speak, promoting plant-based replacement meat, if you want to call it that, in their burgers. It's time. That's why I call it the future is now.
Yeah.
Its time has come, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has completely. If you look around you, all the major fast food chains are promoting at the moment. We've literally just launched our new product in 196 Apple Green stores across the country. We've launched a chicken-free fillet roll across Ireland. So the time is now. If you look at all the major out-of-home campaigns at the moment, they are dedicated towards plant-based. And, you know, it's a really exciting time for us to have a proposition out there in the market, and it seems to be resonating with consumers.
That was a good pitch, wasn't it, Hannah? Were you impressed?
It was very good.
Now, you have to outpitch him. Tell us about what you are involved with, both with the, well, bread, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, so a lot of what Mark said, actually, I can resonate with as well. So Promise Gluten Free is our business, and we've got two power brands. Promise Gluten Free is the first power brand. That's a gluten free bread and cakes brand, and it's an international brand. So we're present in Ireland, the UK, and in the Canadian market. With the Gallagher's Bakehouse, as Mark was saying, that was a brand that we reinvented. The Gallagher's brand in the middle of the pandemic. So we're 1 year out in the market, and we have brought what was traditionally the Gallagher's brand that was based up in Northwest Ireland, County Donegal, its hometown. And we launched nationally in the last year in the middle of the pandemic. Thank you. Without having to have the ability to taste product and do sampling, exactly what Mark said. So that's what kept us busy during the last year.
But you know that there is that term about reinventing the sliced pan. I mean, you talk about a challenge. You didn't exactly make it easy. We got onto gluten in a second, or gluten-free. But trying to outsell another bread, not easy.
No, and I think that was absolutely the challenge that we set ourselves. And I think one of the things we were looking at was from the category point of view. And we were looking at the overall bread category. And there was growth in the category, albeit quite slow. And particularly when we looked at some other categories that we could see there was double-digit growth going. So we felt the category needs a shake-up. We wanted to shake up what the bread category, and the category is filled with amazing brands out there already. There's very, very big, well-established brands that are in every single store from Donegal right through to Cork. We had a brand. We have a brand called Gallagher's that is based in Donegal, but it was really well known in Donegal, and that was it. Our challenge was actually, how do we take a sliced pan brand and launch it nationally? Bread as a category is also quite regional. There's quite local brands and a lot of loyal consumers. And then there's some very, very big brands that are national. And we said to ourselves, look, unless we bring something really breakthrough, and breakthrough is the word here, we cannot compete with everybody else. And, you know, one of the growing trends was, particularly during the pandemic, the timing was fantastic. People were moving to more traditional ways of making bread. A lot of consumers were making their own sourdough bread at home. People were also willing to spend a bit more money and more curious about how products were made and how bread was made. So we thought, well, why don't we bring something that will give even more value to consumers and make sourdough accessible? Bring sourdough into a sliced pan format and bring something that's really breakthrough from a customer point of view, because the category has its challenges in terms of slow growth. So we wanted to bring something that was really, really different, that consumers will be also prepared to pay for a bit more, because we learned during the pandemic they are, if they can find something. So yeah, really proud to say that last November, we completely reinvented the brand. We moved from Gallagher's, we changed the logo to Gallagher's Bakehouse, and we created a brand pretty much from some great product that was there. But as Mark said, the product quality and taste is key, and that was the number one.
And of course, you had the same problem also with tasting there. However, question, because I'm always really interested in this, is what is the process that you went through when you decided, look, we need this breakthrough bread? Did you sit in a room, close the door, and said, "We're not leaving here until we get something new"? Or is it a prop? Is it a process of small ideas being pushed around? Or what process did you actually go through?
Well, we did sit in our room on our own and close the door because we were in the height of the pandemic. I suppose externally, first of all, a small group of us in the business would have looked externally at some of the challenges in the category. We would have looked at the key brands out there. We would have looked at the market performance. We would have looked at global consumer trends. There's a lot of reports out there about what's happening within food to understand what those trends are. And a group of us, I suppose, well, you know, myself, it was our CEO, it was our CFO, it was the marketing manager, a couple of the technical team as well, a cross-functional team would have sat
you
together.
You let an accountant get involved.
I did let an accountant get involved, yes, because we really wanted to premiumize the category as well. But we looked at, I suppose, at all the trends that were happening and identified where we thought the gaps were. And then I would have worked with my team to give a brief to our product developers to say, no, we'd love to develop a premium sourdough product that has got amazing taste and flavour that the Gallagher's brand always had. I would have worked with the design agency as well. But I suppose I would have worked with my marketing manager also on looking at what are the brands out there that we liked? What was it the brand wanted to stand for? And we'd brief a design agency and come up with some concepts.
And then the big challenge for both, and I'll come back to you on this one, Mark, in a second, because you've already told me something really interesting as well. But the challenging to get onto shelf space, say, one of the multiples, at Tesco, yep, at Dunn's, whatever. And they're looking at you and they're saying, it's a bread. And you're, yep, saying, no, it's a special bread. Mm-hmm. And they say, no, it's a bread because it's going to go onto the bread counter. What do you do?
So I suppose I'll go back to one word I mentioned earlier at the beginning, breakthrough. And I think if you can put together a compelling rationale for why something is breakthrough for a category, because every buyer, every customer is looking for innovation that's different, innovation that's going to break through from what's already there. If we had gone with something that was similar to what else is in the market, that would have been a much, much harder challenge. And I suppose customers and buyers also know when they see something that's different that will drive both value in their category.
Aha, I've caught you on this one. How can a customer know what it's like during a pandemic? Because you're not allowed to go and give me little tastes in the supermarket or in the store.
So, well, we find very different ways of getting products. So we send products to their home addresses. We arrange Zoom calls. We have conversations with buyers.
You send bread to people's homes.
Yes, to
you're
sample
a stalker.
Them. We asked for permission first.
Did you actually do that?
We did actually, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
and did that work very well?
It did work very well because the feedback on the product was amazing. And I've always learned, and I suppose one of the, back to your first question about working with big international brands as well, product speaks 1,000 words. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can sit all day and tell you about what an amazing product is, but you need to try it yourself to be convinced. And when you've got a great product, that's a great starting point.
And Mark, you've already told us that you have a frozen product, and yeah, therefore you now start fighting for the frozen food cabinet. Yeah. However, you guys were clever. What did you do?
We knew the category was in growth. So during the pandemic, the frozen food category in general was in double-digit growth. So it's on trend, but there's not a lot of dwell time there because it's cold. So people don't spend a lot of time there.
And is that true?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and there's not a lot of space there. So space is at a premium. So we were launching, we weren't just launching a new product, we were launching a new brand. So it was a whole new portfolio of products. So the key thing for us was to not ask for too much. So we went to the two biggest retailers in Ireland. We went to Supervalue and we went to Tesco, who we started with last January. And we asked for 30 stores to prove out the concept. And we worked with them to find out where the key flagship stores were, and we leased freezer space in those stores.
So is that a first, or have you seen that done before?
No, I have seen it done before, but the idea came from our CEO, Noreen, who's ex-McCain Foods and lived and breathed the frozen food section for many years in her career. So she had a wealth of experience there, which was really useful. The second part of that for us was at Plantit, it's not just about selling great tasting product. We want to give back to the local community. So we embrace our name and plant native trees wherever our product is sold. So to date in Ireland, we've planted over 15,000 native trees over the last year. So what we try to do is we're trying to bring new consumers into the category. The objective is we're trying to promote plant-based eating. So you make a good choice and come into the category and try plant-based food, we will make a tangible difference to your local community and plant trees.
And I'm
we
going to come to you in a second there to ask you about your credentials about planting trees and all. But sorry, back to the freezer.
Yeah, the freezer, yeah.
Are you still leasing or have you not proven the concept so therefore it's ready to go?
I've leased them for a year, so I move them around different stores depending on the opportunity, right? So once we've proven the concept and consumers know where they can get it, we then move elsewhere. But we have such a really nice story as a brand to tell. We had to create a whole, as I said, we created the brand from scratch in terms of the aesthetic, the messaging, the storytelling. And it was designed to stand out in the freezer. So we actually branded them treasers, not freezers, going back to the tree planting idea.
And that we put so big trees. Bad.
Yeah. I know it is. It's so bad. That's it's good. It's going to. It's just
it'll stick in my head.
It will. It's going to annoy you all day. No, sorry about that. But it was. We're a small company. We didn't have big budgets, so we had to make sure that we, at the point of purchase, that we were standing out. And then we, I suppose, instead of big above the line campaigns, we invested with micro influencers to tell our stories. We sent them products similar to what Greta said. You know, we sent out gift packs to anybody who has an interest in plant based foods, who has an interest in cooking, and we sent gift packs and we planted trees in their name. I didn't spend any money bringing partners on board. We used our mission to get the word out there. So that created the awareness, and then the trees are created the conversion in store. So
I'm obviously on the wrong mailing list because I haven't seen any of these things coming in my way. But in terms of, in Greta's case, she is competing against other breads. Yeah. Who is your biggest competitor? As I don't mean their name, because there might be not one that you want to promote, but what kind of products are you competing against?
We're up against the meat-free category is not new. It's been around for a number of years. There are
a number of years.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Because Greta has, like, the fellas with 150 or 200 years of...
Absolutely. Our category is new, which means there's always room for improvement. Nobody's perfected it yet. And what we see a lot is that some brands do some products really well. Like, some might do a meat-free burger really well, or some might have a really good chicken product. But it's rare that you see a brand that can deliver across all of the different... species or formats, if you want to, for want of a better way of explaining it. And that's what Plantit does is, again, our objective is to have a product for every meal occasion. So we have egg-free, fish-free, meat-free, chicken-free, veggies. So there's no matter what type of product you're in the mood for, we can bring something different to the category. So the buyers are coming to us saying, I've got fatigue, I can't try another plant-based burger or another plant-based chicken nugget, bring me something different. And that's, as a small business, what we've had the flexibility to be able to do because we have our own production facility, our own innovation centre in the one place in Dublin.
And I presume you've got, Dublin being, you're in Chapelizod.
Yes.
Yeah. I presume you've got worldwide ambitions, have you?
Absolutely, yeah. This is a big year coming up. So we launched initially in Ireland, and the idea was to prove out the concept. In the second half of last year, as things have opened up, we launched in Finland. We've just gone live in...
Finland?
Yeah.
Why Finland?
Honestly, at the beginning with startups, it was where we had access. We had a good customer contact from a past life that we got in touch with. And that's, you break out the Rolodex when you're a startup and you try and speak to whoever you can. And if they have a route to market for you.
You're so young, I don't believe that you even know what a Rolodex is. You know what a Rolodex is? I know it's a word.
First of all, I appreciate the compliment. secondly, it definitely wasn't my contact. It was one from someone on the board who managed to get us in.
So you get into Finland. That's fantastic. Fantastic. Where else?
We've just gone live in 460 stores in Morrison's in the UK as of last week. And the UK and the US are our big push for this year. We've bought product on the way to the US at the moment. We go live in the US from February.
You are listening to the Love Irish Food podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.
Greta, Canada. You ship bread to Canada.
Yeah, so Promise, as I mentioned earlier, Promise Gluten Free is our international brand. And Promise today is, it's very big in Ireland. We're present in the UK, and Canada is a very, very big market for us as well.
When you said that to me, I am not easily stopped in my tracks, but I said, no.
What it demonstrates, and as Mark said, big ambitions for this brand to be international. But what it demonstrates as well is this is a gluten-free product. And globally, anybody who has a celiac disease, we estimate there's about 1 or 2% of the population who are celiac. their desires, their needs, their wants are the same globally.
But there are others producing gluten-free bread, I'm sure.
There are other breads in the Canadian market. It's just as if not even more competitive than some of our markets closer to home.
So how did you get into Canada in the first instance?
So very similar story to Mark, who was a contact in one of the major retailers. Yeah, one of our major retailers. We're today now in Sobeys, which is the number two supermarket within Canada across the whole country, and we've just recently launched into Metro nationally and Loblaws as well.
That is fantastic. It's a great success story.
It is, yeah.
So therefore, your ambition presumably is not curtailed to that. Well, where next, or where else would you be looking?
Well, I suppose we also have a sister brand in the US called Rudy's, which is a gluten-free and an organic brand. And I suppose that's probably the bigger opportunity for America. Promise we will continue to focus on Canada. But even closer to home, within Ireland and within the UK and with Europe, there is plenty of opportunity to drive more consumption and more penetration in the category.
I'm sure I'm not allowed to even mention the B for Brexit word, but I presume that Brexit did for your heads. Have any of you seen any opportunity because of Brexit? Mark, maybe there isn't. I know it's a headache for everybody.
It's certainly been a challenge for some retailers, and there's been some opportunities to fill space on shelves. We've leveraged that to our advantage to help secure brand listings going forward.
I've heard others saying that, yeah.
Yeah, we have. That's so you have to look at it as an opportunity, and if you can, what can you get out of it for yourself? And yeah, that's helped us unlock.
Nigel Farage would be very proud of you.
That's the first time anyone's ever said that to me.
And in the case of the bread, what about Europe? I'm not hearing that you have eyes on Germany or some of the larger markets, no?
Not at the moment. Yeah. But again,
what's the thinking there? I mean, Canada, America, presumably, US, presumably are massively served by huge bread brands. I don't know, actually, but I don't.
Yeah, there are very big bread brands, both in America and both in Canada. But I suppose what we have demonstrated is the product that we have developed from a superiority point of view is winning in Canada, both on nutritional profile and also on taste. And that was one of the big insights. We did research also with Canadian consumers to understand where the gaps were and how we
did
could...
Did you mail them bread?
We have done through influencers, like Mark said, on Planted. We have, and we have a team based in the Canadian market. We have a commercial director. We have a marketing manager.
That's a big
commitment. The Canadian market. It is a very big commitment, yeah. Yeah,
but obviously it is the investment that you have to make to grow there. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So beyond that, what do you do as a bakery? Do you decide we'll expand the range, or do you go deep? Do you go wide? What do you do?
I suppose one of the it's not just unique to bakery. It's probably the same in any category. But you always ask yourself, first of all, within the core range and within your core bread, can you drive any more penetration? So can you get more people into the category? Bread is very highly penetrated, to use an example. It's probably about 99% of consumers are choosing bread. So if you can bring more people in, that would be the first question we'd ask. The second area is around driving more consumption. So can we get consumers to consume more? So in our gluten-free example, because our product tastes so good, consumers are actually consuming it more than what they may have tasted in the past. So we're driving more consumption within the category. And that's really interesting also from a retailer when they see you coming with a proposition that can drive either penetration or consumption within the core. But then the second area is also adjacent categories. Can we stretch into adjacent categories? Can the brand stretch into adjacent? Because there may be an opportunity to move into snack bars, but you actually might say, no, the brand probably cannot stretch there. Whereas if I look at the Promise Gluten Free, we are playing both in bread and within the confectionery, within cakes category. And that's working. So we've got a smaller range within our confectionery and within our cakes. And we've exciting plans to look at that area. So those, I suppose, are the questions that we ask ourselves. One, within the core, can we drive more? And also the portfolio and the range, very similar to Mark, what you've said, different occasions. So not just for your breakfast, but for your lunch in terms of pitas, in terms of wraps. There's loads of different formats you can play with. And then also adjacencies is also a very interesting space to consider.
I'm fascinated by your knowledge because it's, you know, you've huge knowledge, obviously, of things chocolate. And of things cheese,
yeah.
But now you have dived big, I can hear, into all things bread.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so
did you know anything about bread when you started?
I knew about bread because I'm a consumer of bread. Yes,
of course.
Yeah, and I'm not a celiac consumer, but I do enjoy products with gluten free because I believe there's a benefit in eating gluten free breads. So I'm learning a lot more about the bread category in the last number of years.
As people do now, question: you go to Canada. Did being Irish help, hinder? Do they care? They just want to see the growth pattern.
Sorry. Ask me that again. Did they care?
The large retailers? Did they say you're an Irish brand?
We were very vocal about the fact that we were an Irish brand. They really liked the Irish story. What they really liked about us actually was we were coming with over 50 years experience of making bread. So we had been making conventional bread or Gallagher's bread since late 1960s. We had recently moved into gluten-free. And I think what they really appreciated was we were coming with a lot of bakery and bread background. We weren't just a new kid in the block talking about a gluten-free proposition with no credentials. So that was one thing that they really loved. They also very much welcomed the Irish story. We were standing at expos, I remember in Vancouver before the pandemic, actually sampling our product, telling our story. And a lot of these consumers were celiac. It was like an expo for celiac. There was about 10,000 people that had come through the door. And the majority of them were commenting, I can't believe you guys have come all the way from Ireland and you're selling your product and you're giving it to us. And I suppose these consumers who were celiac were also looking for products to help make them feel better because they could enjoy products again and they really appreciated that. So the fact that we were there, their story, we came with bakery credentials and we engaged with them very, very at a local level. And we've done a number of different expos like that. So yes.
Well, if I could jump in there, exact same thing. We literally just did the Plant-Based World Expo in New York before Christmas on the 9th and 10th of December. And we flew the Irish flag there and we got the exact same feedback because there's just that tradition and that heritage that Ireland is known internationally for being just a fantastic source of food. And there's that trust that's built up there.
I know we say that, but sometimes we say things about ourselves and I just wonder whether whether we're maybe being a little bit big-headed about it. But do you actually, that's your direct experience, is it?
That's direct experience. Yeah. We had multiple big retailers in the US come up and that was a big tick in our box that you're an Irish brand. Yeah, absolutely.
It is fantastic.
No, it really was a positive thing to see.
Mm. Yeah, and Greta, you were saying you're agreeing with that, yeah?
Yeah, from the one-on-one interactions that I had with thousands of Canadian consumers over the
But that's at the
years,
individual level. I'm really interested, like when you're dealing with the massive chain stores.
Yeah.
Like, they must be so cynical. They couldn't care less if it came from Mars, really, could they?
Well, I suppose it was, as I said to you, we came with a really, really compelling story. And a lot of that was our bakery credentials that was very different to a lot of the other players in the market. We came with breakthrough innovation. We came with a category growth story. And the fact that we are Irish, they like the Irish. And as you say, Mark, there's an element of trust and expectation that the Irish are known for their food. So it helped. It wasn't the only reason, but it certainly helped.
And in your case, Mark, did the Finns know where Ireland even was?
No, I see in certain markets it's much less significant. What we do with the Finns and what we do internationally where you mightn't have the same level of Irish foods mightn't have the same level of awareness or knowledge we adapt the brand mission to that story. So we're still planting trees in Finland or we're planting trees in Dubai or wherever because that's where the product is sold. So we're committed to making a difference in that local market because we feel that everybody's become a lot more parochial over the last 18 months or so because they've been stuck in their community.
And Finland and or Dubai, does it actually resonate with them that you're making that commitment?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Yeah.
Where are you seeing that feedback or where are you finding that out?
Well, consumers are savvy, right? But also, as Greta said, the first thing we'll do is research. So if our whole principles are choose good and do good, if I want to understand, if you're going to make a good choice, I need to know how many consumers are open to coming into the category. And we've seen that on average, between 70 and 80% of consumers are open to going plant-based one day a week. That's excluding vegans and vegetarians. And then in terms of the do good piece, we know there's a premiumization that people are willing to spend more. And Greta even said it in terms of trying to add value and grow the category. Well, actually, if I know that that's making a difference to my local community or my country or where I'm from, then I'm willing to invest there. And not many other brands are doing stuff like that or backing a mission like that. And that's something that's very different about what we do. And it's, we commit and we invest ahead of the curve there. And it seems to be something that's resonating with consumers.
Now, you came out of Glanbia, as we mentioned at the very, very beginning, which has become a world brand.
Yeah.
Will Plantit become a world brand?
That's certainly the ambition. busy couple of months ahead to try and get
months?
There.
Months? Yeah. Years, I think.
Yeah,
but,
well, one step at a time. Try not look too far ahead.
So 3 to 5 years' time, where will you be?
Everywhere, hopefully.
Choosing good, doing good.
Yeah. Just hopefully, you know, riding on the crest of a wave of a consumer base that's interested in and really coming into living the category and eating and breathing it and trying it across multiple different meal occasions. And for me, it's about it's laws of brand growth. It's physical availability and mental availability. Having, as Greta talked about, having the brand in a variety of different formats so that if you're hungry, you can have a planted product no matter what time of the day it is and where you're shopping.
Anything very different cooking, if I can call it that? Anything that you're working on that I'm not allowed to know about?
Yeah. I'll give you one for Ireland. Yeah, coming up, probably the most ordered traditional takeaway in Ireland. We're making a plant-based version of it that will be available on your shelves within the next month across the country.
The most ordered. I'll have to think about that. Fish and chips.
Close. Spice bag.
We're creating a
plant-based spice bag.
Brilliant.
It's going to go.
And the same question about that I was asking Greta there about, you know, do you sit in a little room to thinking these things up? Somebody
Most
has to think
definitely.
Of it. Who does that?
Monday to Wednesday in the factory.
Is this you or is there a team?
No,
or?
Exactly to Greta's point, it's a combination of people because people have different positions and they've been exposed to different things and different meetings. So you've commercial, you've finance, you've everybody who kind of comes together, and once a week we'll sit in a room, we'll map out our priorities, and that's the really great thing. Greta mentioned it earlier, you know, it can take a long time. In our past lives, your innovation pipeline and NPD and launches and products can take 18 months, 2 years. With a small business size, you can really be flexible and turn something around very, very quickly. And we've used that to our advantage to help us unlock
some
doors.
Well, may that last. And Greta, similarly with your bread brands, where next? I'll ask a question. What not? Why not South America? I often wonder why we don't go to South America.
I suppose what we do is we look to prioritize what markets, one, from a consumer point of view, would our offer resonate. Secondly, from a customer point of view, what's relevant for us, but also the route to market. The route to market's really, really, really important. Even, you know, we're in a category on conventional bread, which is fresh bread. We deliver to our retailers. We service our retailers every day of the week.
You deliver to Vancouver.
On our gluten-free business, yeah. So I suppose it's wondering, one, where we think the biggest opportunity is from a market. So we know there's probably a higher incidences of celiac consumers in certain markets potentially than others. The percentage of growth in the category, if one country is growing faster than the other, there may be an opportunity. But we're prioritizing both our markets and then our brands with which to play.
Final question, because I better have a final question, is what would either or both of you like, one thing, just one thing that you would like for the Irish food industry? Mark, just one thing.
Ooh.
I know I didn't prep you for this.
No, you didn't. What would I like for the Irish food industry?
Massive promotion or...
No,
it's a huge success story, which I sometimes feel, you know, could be better publicised.
Maybe, but we work with very closely with Bord Bia internationally, and I think they've been fantastic help to us in terms of unlocking new retail partners, in terms of brand awareness and PR. They're helping me with the launch, for example, in the UK. I think maybe we need to focus on it maybe a bit more at home.
Okay.
Yeah, and a bit more support for it at home. But I think internationally, I've seen nothing but positive things from the people.
In your spice burger.
Yeah.
And Greta,
I would say exactly the same thing as Mark. We've had huge support from Bord Bia as well. And probably a lot more of the focus we've gone to them is for international.
Yeah.
But actually supporting smaller startup businesses in our home market, we take that for granted that we can win in our local market. And a lot of companies are using Ireland as a test market. Like Mark, you described that earlier as well. So the more support there in terms of how we can actually really test ourselves in our home market before we even worry about international.
It's an awful pity we haven't just a little bit bigger population, isn't it? Because we're just probably shy of actually being able to support.
Well, consumers can always plenty of occasions for consumers to choose food.
Absolutely.
That was the last voice there with Greta Hamill. She is Chief Marketing Officer of Promise Gluten Free, which is made at Gallagher's Bakehouse up in Dunung Isle, isn't it?
Donegal.
And Mark Ryan, who's Marketing Director at Plantit, who is based in Chapelizod with their HQ in Pembroke Street in Dublin. And I love those stories. I'm just enthused again because when I hear these stories, going to Vancouver with bread, I love it. So thank you so much for joining us on episode 9 of the Love Irish Food Green Ireland podcast series. As I mentioned at the very beginning, do listen back to the other 8. They are great fun, very insightful, I believe, and I hope that you have learned something from today's chat. Thank you so much.
The Love Irish Food Podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.